Columbia Barnard Rabbi tells his Jewish students to go home. The university cannot keep them safe. Crazy that this is happening. 2024 and full-out Nazi youth are terrifying Jewish students on university campuses in New York City. The world has gone mad, and I'm here to talk about it with you. Erev Pesach, coming at you live from the land of Israel. This is Hanala Music, your talented and lovely host of the Weekly Squeeze podcast, with episode 189 of your favorite show. Coming at you live from the land of Israel. It's a beautiful day. In fact, I had a marvelous walk. Hang on, I'm just going to open my shrifin real quick. Oh, there we go. It's full on spring slash summer, which means that the thistles are out. Everything is kind of drying out. The sun is strong. There hasn't been rain in a few weeks. Not really. Not here in Beit Shemesh. And walking can be hazardous for your health. And I know this because I walk in the mountains almost every single day. And it's so interesting to see how the land just reacts in tandem with the weather. It's a beautiful cycle of life. Things are growing. And like today, they were just sheaths of wheat growing on the mountain. And I was like, wow, it's Taka almost Shavuos. And Shavuos is when the farmers, they gather their wheat, right? The holiday of the harvesting. So for me, it's always very emotional. First of all, because I count another year that we've been here in Israel. This August will be 7 full years. 7 full years. And yes, my kids are not speaking Hebrew between themselves. I thought they would be. I feel a little bad. I mean, they do use Hebrew phrases, mostly just to like fight. And I guess that's normal because, you know, kids just use a lot of slang and that's what they've picked up, which is fine. But they are true Israelis. They love it here. And the last 7 years have been full of the most marvelous experiences that have come just from having the privilege to live here in the Holy Land, in the most beautiful country, the most beautiful space on earth. I know I'm biased. I know I'm a little obsessed. I know it's my job. But I love this place, and I can't help it. And I will take it with all its crap. And believe me, there is a lot of it. I'm not sure if you've heard, but we've been under attack. We are in an active war zone at the moment. And that's not even talking about the grocery stores that are full on battlegrounds. I mean, the way people are fighting over chickens, Erev Pesach, you could think, how many chickens do you need before Pesach? I mean, it's 1 week. It's full on panic. Full on panic. And I'm not into this. I'm not into this. I'm not the one who's running into the store and grabbing things off the shelf because I need one more bag of matzo meal. I have 10 potatoes. I have plenty of tomatoes. I have cucumbers. I filled up the freezer. I made my dog her dog food. I got, you know, some new pots and pans, brought up my containers, covered my counters, vacuumed the whole house, and voila, it's Pesach. I don't know why everybody are melting down in grocery stores all across this country. Like, there's going to be no food. Bibi said during COVID, there's no shortage of food. They have silos of food. Everybody will be fed. Everyone needs to relax. But we're traumatized. You know, I was reading Shabbos. Let me see if I could find it. Do I have a book for you, by the way? Hang on. Where is that book? Here it is. Hang on, everybody chill. I'm here. So when I was by my sister in Muncie, she gave me a book called The Book of Jewish Knowledge. And this book is magnificent. I don't even know if you can buy it. But if you can, get your hands on it. It's printed, published by JLI, the Jewish Learning Institute. And it's called the Book of Jewish Knowledge. And it's beautifully, beautifully bound. It comes in a lovely case. And it's a work of art. It basically covers everything you need to know about Judaism, from the Jewish people, Jewish knowledge, Jewish teaching, Jewish law, Jewish practice, Jewish holidays, milestones, just the whole thing. And it's beautifully created with gorgeous graphics and timelines. I told you guys, I suffer from dementia. I can't determine dimensions. Let's put it that way. So when I see timelines, that's extremely helpful for me because I want to know when things happen. I want to know, let's say you have Akedas Yitzchak, and this is on the timeline of the temple and the mount. So Akedas Yitzchak was the first incident, recorded incident, that we knew took place on Har HaMoria. But, you know, for me, it's hard to figure out, like, how far away was that from when the second base of Mikdash was destroyed? Or when, let's see here, the destruction of the first base of Mikdash, or the construction of the second base of Mikdash, or just, you know, here, the Muslims built the mosque on the Temple Mount, as well as the Dome of the Rock, believed to be situated above the site of the temple, in 637. And then, 1,000 years later, the Israeli Defense Force recaptured the Old City and the Temple Mount during the Six-Day War. There's a lot of history in Israel, and there's a lot of facts, and having a beautiful book like this, and nobody asked me to market it. I just simply was going over it on Shabbos, and I thought it was... The reason I even bring it up is because I'm reminded time and time again how much the Jews have suffered here in Israel. I mean, the numbers, the gore, the merciless enemies that the Jewish people have had, the slaughter, the bloodshed, the way the Arabs just refused to let us live at peace when we came here after the Holocaust, the way they created a blockade around Yerushalayim, literally starving the people. The people were starving. They were eating grass. And there was no social media there to portray it to the world. The British were apathetic at best, participants at worst with the Arabs. The Jews were starving. They couldn't get their food trucks up to Yerushalayim from Tel Aviv. It's a mountain, and the Arabs kept ambushing. As a matter of fact, if you drive on the highway now, you can still see the remains of some of the tanks that were overcome. It was a terrible time, and it was all the Arabs' fault. I mean, these Jews came, 1/3 of Israel were Holocaust survivors. I mean, to think what they went through and then to come here and have to deal with the terrorism, it's been nonstop for 75 years. So, you know, you can't be judgmental when people are fighting over chickens. People here are scarred, and I totally get it. I meet people on the street I haven't seen in a few weeks, and I'm like, they're like, how are you? I'm like, give me a hug, and I want to cry. Because we're all carrying so much pain. There's so much pain. There's just so much pain here. And it's Yom Tov, and we're supposed to be joyful, and we're supposed to be celebrating, and we're supposed to be getting together with families in the parks and making picnics. But here we are. War is in our face here in the land of Israel, and it's very scary times. I know it's only been a week since the largest missile attack ever in modern history was conducted on Israel, on me and my sleeping children. But, you know, since then, there's been a lot. There has been a lot. I cannot put my phone down. I literally cannot put my phone down. So this is what's going on now that I have put my phone down and come here to talk to you guys. So let's try to recap. I don't even know how far to go back. Okay, so Iran attacked Israel, and then Israel conducted a counterattack on Iran, but not the people of Iran. So that's something we also have to talk about. And I'm working on having my friend Emily Schrader come on the podcast and talk about the people of Iran and how many of them don't support their government. Their government is oppressive. Their government rules with an iron hand. Their government forces women to cover up. Their government is corrupt. Their government are Arabs. They hang people in the street. They're extreme religious Arab Muslims that are fully invested in terrorism. That's their ideology. They fund all the terrorism. They are a hub of terrorism. And in Iran, they commission their proxies. In Iran, they conduct what we end up experiencing here, supplying money and weapons and making connections and hosting other terrorists from other countries. I know this is a very basic, elementary way of explaining it, but I'm breaking it down for my kids, and I'm like trying to explain to them why Iran is suddenly in the picture. Who has patience for Iran? Who cares about Iran or the Iranian people? And, you know, kudos to Emily for fighting for them, but I don't know if I even have the emotional space, the capacity to care that much for the Iranian people. Like, it sucks for you that your government is this way. It sucks for you that things used to be better, and, you know, figure it out and make sure that they stop shooting missiles at us. You can't, whatever, we'll deal with it. You know, Hashem can handle your mullahs. And he will. But not without giving us a run for our money as Israelis. So, and I'm not complaining. I'm not saying like I'm defeated or it's hard for me to live here or I have any regrets. I love living here. I'm obsessed with this country. I'm obsessed with everything related to this country. And I spend an awful lot of time thinking about it. So let me give you the rundown of what I know. So hang on. I'm going to open Twitter because Twitter is where the people are. Back to Colombia. Back to Colombia. So apparently, the rabbi of Colombia, he sends a WhatsApp messages to all the Jewish students. Now, the Chabad rabbi of Barnard is very involved with the students, as are so many Chabad rabbis, and they are the spiritual leaders of many of these students who don't otherwise have access to anything religious their entire year when they're away from home at a very perilous time in their lives when things are so confusing. So they all turn to the rabbi, and the rabbi tells them in the group straight up. He says, "Dear Yavna," again, this is the WhatsApp message from the Chabad rabbi of Colombia. I believe he's Chabad. I have to double check. And he sent this to all the students. This is yesterday. He says, "What we are witnessing in and around campus is terrible and tragic. The events of the last few days, especially last night, have made it clear that Columbia's university's public safety and the New York Police Department cannot guarantee Jewish students' safety in the face of extreme anti-Semitism and anarchy." Now, if you haven't seen the videos, lucky you. You know, I get why Arabs make their wives stay home, because they're behemoths. I mean, did you see these Arab women screaming, these daughters and granddaughters of Arabs? I'm not saying, okay, they could be in America for a year, but just like you, when you become Chassidish, suddenly you speak like a Lubavitcher, even though you haven't ever met the Rebbe. It's like a sprach. The same way, they have that accent, Ghazza, Ghazza, and they're screaming. They're behemoths. They're literally, they have no shame. Have you seen any videos? I'm sorry, I'm just going to close the treesome here. The sun is in my eyes. Have you seen any videos of Jewish women standing with megaphones and yelling like Treshida Talib? They're all just, they're behemoths, the women. They seriously are. And the less we see of them, the better. And when it comes to that part of Islam, I'm all for it. The point is, it's absolutely appalling. It's not even appalling. It is, you know, I spoke to Walter Bingham. You guys remember, if you are a listener to this podcast for years already, you remember that I spoke to the oldest news Jewish newscaster, journalist, podcast host in history, Sir Walter Bingham. And he describes the 1930s in Germany. And I spoke to him about it. And he said, what he's seeing now, and this is already 2 years ago, what he's seeing now, and this is 2 years ago, is reminiscent of 1930s Germany. Okay, so what we're seeing on the college campuses, and Alan Dershowitz calls them Nazi youth, it's a very bad thing. It's a very bad thing. It's a very bad thing, and it's spreading like crazy. So, yeah, Anyway, back to the WhatsApp message, WhatsApp group. The rabbi writes, "It deeply pains me to say that I would strongly recommend you return home as soon as possible and remain home until the reality in and around campus has dramatically improved. It's not our job as Jews to ensure our own safety on campus. No one should have to endure this level of hatred, let alone at school. If you need assistance, please reach out to me. May we see better days on campus soon. Chag Kasher V'Sameach, Rav Eli Buchler, Director, OU, JLIC at Columbia Barnard." Okay, so that's not Chabad. In any case, very, very sad, very scary. Students are writing that they have actually gone home. And yeah, I guess that, I mean, this is on the university. I mean, if Columbia is ready to become Judenrein, free of all Jewish students, then, you know, I guess here we are. Very, very sad. And this morning there's been a complete flood of pushback, thank God. Although it's too late. It is too late. At the end of the day, it is too late. I'm sorry, I'm just looking for the statement that, here, this is from Mayor Adams in New York City, which, by the way, is a giant trash can. And that's me being tedious with my language. Here, Mayor Adams' statement on ongoing protests at Columbia University. This is from this morning, from his press office. "I am horrified and disgusted with the anti-Semitism being spewed at and around the Columbia University campus. Like the example of a young woman holding a sign with an arrow pointing to Jewish students stating Al-Qassam's next targets." They're basically just chanting what they're chanting here on the streets of Gaza and the West Bank. I mean, they would they're emulating their heroes. They feel like Hamas and the Palestinian people are heroes. So they're essentially supporting terrorism and probably giving money to terrorists and taking over universities in the name of terrorism. This is a big deal. Or where another woman is literally yelling, "We are Hamas." Or another where groups of students are chanting, "We don't want no Zionists here." That's like saying, "We don't want no Jews here." They want the Jews to go away. Thousands of miles away from Israel, by the way. These are just academic Jews whose parents paid tuition just like theirs did. "And I condemn this hate speech in the strongest of terms. Supporting a terrorist organization that aims to kill Jews is sickening and despicable. As I have repeatedly said, hate has no place in our city." Ha. "And I've instructed the NYPD to investigate any violation of law that's reported. Rest assured, the NYPD will not hesitate to arrest anyone who is found to be breaking the law. I'll believe it when I see it. We will not be a city of lawlessness, and those professional agitators seeking to seize this ongoing conflict in the Middle East to sow chaos and division in our city will not succeed. I want to make it abundantly clear," he says, "however, Columbia University is a private institution on private property, which means the NYPD cannot have a presence on campus." In other words, they can't militarize the campus. "The NYPD has increased presence of officers situated around the campus to protect students and all New Yorkers on nearby public streets." Blah, blah, blah. "I urge Columbia senior administration officials to improve and maintain an open line of communication with the NYPD." Blah, blah, blah. "I know the conflict in the Middle East has left us, many of us, grieving and angry." Well, the Jews have a right to be angry. Everyone else, they're just Jew haters, anti-Semites. "You have a right to express your sorrow, but that heartbreak does not give anyone the right to harass or threaten or to physically harm someone else they disagree with. As mayor of the city with the largest Jewish community in the world outside of Israel, the pain these protests are causing Jews across the globe is not lost on me, especially as we start Passover tomorrow evening. I also see and hear the pain of those protesting in support of innocent lives being lost in Gaza." Well, put that on your sign. Free Gaza from Hamas. Leave the Jews alone. So that's the message from Mayor Adams. I saw Biden, his team put out a message, whatever. Speaking of Biden, did you guys see in Colombia this woman, sorry, I'm going to put my phone down. It has a chain on it. It's annoying. Who brought her dead uncle to the bank to sign a loan so she could take that loan. Basically, he dropped dead and she's like, "Oh, shoot," or "Oh, great, now I can go get a loan in his name." And she brings him in a wheelchair and she's holding the pen and trying to get him to sign the loan papers. And he's cold as a corpse. And I actually had the displeasure of seeing the uncensored video. And yeah, it's just, you know, kind of like President Biden. So may he live and be well. But the fact is, whatever they tweeted out on behalf of the president, it's just words, because at the end of the day, America has handled this whole war just insensitively, let's put it that way, at best. At worst, this just goes to show what happens when you deal with terrorists. Everything gets exponentially worse. And Biden's administration, they interact with all these people, and all these people interact with, listen, it's just a chain of hierarchy from an agitator in a college university to an Iranian-funded Hamas terrorist general. And whatever. Then, by the way, these guys, you watch Fauda, they're just rotting in basements somewhere, plotting their terrorism and meditating. And they're truly psychopaths. These people they're true psychopaths, and they're obsessed. It's not like they do anything else. This war can last as long as they want it to. As long as they have the capacity to fight Israel, they will. And America handed them their youth. They're like, "Hey, do you want the American youth? Well, you can have them on a Chinese platter, okay? Here is TikTok, and you can use it to raise money for Hamas. You can use it to garner sympathy for terrorism and create a massive deluge of fake news that keeps me and my peers up 24 hours a day fighting like whack-a-mole, all this fake news garbage. So think nothing of it. All of these people on these college campuses, they're on the same phones as I am. They're in the same Telegram groups that I am. They're very in the know of what they're supporting. You cannot miss it. But they are going with it because they hate the Jewish people. And that is their number one cause. And they refuse to see the paradox of what they're doing, their behavior, and how they are literally warmongerers. These people have become, gone from being peace, you know, bleeding heart, peace-loving liberals to being warmongers. And they're attacking Jews because right now they're in America. So they're going to attack the closest Jew to them. If they were here in Israel, would they walk around the Yerushalayim stabbing people? I don't know. Why not? I mean, isn't that their cause? And these things happen, you know, they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions. People have good intentions. They're going to free the world. They're going to free Gaza. And before you know it, they're chasing Jews in the street. And it's horrifying. I'm horrified. I'm devastated. As a matter of fact, I am truly, truly devastated. And I wrote this in a group. First of all, as far as Eric Adams' message goes, I said, there must be a couple hundred mosques in New York alone, right? I read somewhere like 350. Now, you have thousands of people who visit them. Some of these mosques can hold 1,000 people. You have thousands of people who visit them. Every day, they're being taught to rail and agitate against Israel, okay? So they're being brainwashed every single minute. And then, you know, the black people in New York City, well, we can't exactly count on them to protect and defend their fellow citizens because they're running around knocking Hasidic people out already for 20 years. They look at Jews like little suckers and they just take out all their issues on them because they have issues, unfortunately. So I shudder to think about what these two groups are going to look like when they join forces and, God forbid, march through the streets of Brooklyn again. A la the Crown Heights riots. My 90-year-old grandmother lives there on Empire Boulevard. She can't leave the house anymore. She can't leave the house anymore. And she used to walk every single day everywhere. I mean, my grandmother was shopping at Costco a couple of minutes ago, months ago, but whatever. The point is that New York is not safe anymore for Jewish people. I would not want my grandmother to walk alone, God forbid, ever. So amazing. And I was just there and I saw how, I mean, New York has never been lovely in my eyes, but at least it had, you know, there was some respectability to it. Now, forget it. The place is just full of smoke shops from JFK to every borough, just complete. And it's just, listen, we are in big trouble. And I was thinking this on my walk today. Imagine if all New Yorkers packed up their stuff and came to Israel. Imagine Jewish American New Yorkers took all their money out of New York City. I mean, just for a minute, hypothetically, and brought it, the real estate, we're talking about billions of dollars of real estate, sold their stuff, brought the money here to Israel. What could be better than that? Seriously, I don't know what the Jews are thinking. Guys, get out. It's not going to get better. It's not going to get better. And if this weekend, or this week at Columbia University is not an indication of where we're at, then you guys are missing the clues. You are missing the story. And I hate to break it to you, Erev Yom Tov, but things have not gotten better. They've only gotten worse. Terrorists attempted to shoot, failed, and ram. There was a terrorist. Yeah, there was a car ramming today in Yerushalayim. Baruch Hashem. I don't think anyone was injured or maybe lightly injured. Other than that, what's going on here in Israel? I mean, we don't have the Chatufim back. I don't even, the whole year passed. I mean, we went from Simchas Torah to Pesach. And our poor, poor hostage families, poor, I don't know what they did to deserve this. I don't know what anyone does to deserve suffering, but this is sheer hell. This is your skin being peeled alive. To know that your loved one is dead or alive in the hands of people who have no value for Jewish lives, as a matter of fact, think that Jewish lives exist only for them to abuse and take, it's horrifying. It's truly horrifying and very, very painful. So, you know, there's been a lot of Instagram footage and videos made reminding the world that there's still 133 innocent people being held captivity in Gaza. And they will not be celebrating Pesach with their families this year. And their families will just sob through the Seder. Because how can you have a Seder? And how can you speak of freedom when your loved one is being held and is in prison and you can't get to them and you need a miracle. So hopefully that's what it'll be about, just the focus on the miracles. It takes 1 second, and no one said it's easy, but Hashem comes through for the Jewish people. He always does. He always has. And I believe he will again. It's time to let our people go and demand freedom. You know, every year we sit at the Seder and we're like, it's a hypothetical freedom. We are free. Look, we're free. We can come and go. I mean, COVID obviously brought an extra layer of awareness to what we can and can't do and how quickly things could change. But at the end of the day, you know, that ended. And then we were back to normal like we've been for so many years. It's hard to want geula. It's hard to want redemption when you don't feel like you're imprisoned. But we are imprisoned. I don't think one person listening now hasn't shed a tear or many tears for the poor, poor Israelis who are in the hands of Hamas and suffering unspeakable, unspeakable horrors. I mean, it's just, it's beyond. So, you know, we all have compassion and beating hearts and we're human and we've all thought about what it would be like if, God forbid, it was one of our loved ones, a spouse, a child, a parent. And we really have to ask this year for Geula. We really, really have to tune in to what we're saying at the Seder and beg Hashem to reach down and with a Yad Chazaka, take us out of this galus. I'm emotional. It's just, it's sad. It's like I want to be happy for Yom Tov, but at the same time, there's so much bad news. There's just so many things that I'm worried about or afraid of, or, you know, it's just nonstop. I'm getting more information now about the terrorist attack this morning. Apparently, they drove into a group of ultra-Orthodox Jews. Chassidim, Hashem Yishmar. This is a Carlo-type weapon that was found, which the terrorist dropped after it jammed, Baruch Hashem. These people are obsessed. These people are obsessed with murdering Jews. The world doesn't understand. The world does not understand what we're dealing with. Instead, they're busy sanctioning the IDF. Now, I don't know much about sanctioning or international law. But from what I heard this week, hang on, I'm going to pull this up, make sure I have the details for you. I'm sorry, it's Erev Yom Tov. I did not have time to prepare. But basically, the United States is poised to sanction the IDF. Okay, there's a unit in the IDF, the Netzach Yehuda Battalion, which, by the way, is the from Haredi Battalion. And in the bizarre reality that we now live in, the Biden administration has announced, or they're about to announce, that they're sanctioning this battalion for, listen to this, alleged human rights abuses against Palestinians in the West Bank. It would be the first time the U.S. has ever taken such a step. And then the article says they were in the center of several controversies in the past. Right-wing extremism just means that they protect Israel and all its land. And that when these little terrorist cockers come out of the weeds and try to attack any Jews living anywhere in Israel, they push back and they defend and fight against these terrorist rats. So now, mind you, this week, a 14-year-old, Binyamin Achimeir, was murdered. A sweet boy, I don't even know him, but I saw a video of the Shiva and it's heartbreaking. These people, no one loves Eretz Yisrael more than these people. They settle the land. They inherit the land. The word mitnachel, it translates as settlers, but it's not. Settlers connote something negative. It's inheritors of the land. You know, the Shvatim, they were given sections of this land, and that became their dearest portion of Eretz Yisrael. So you have this boy who was murdered violently and viciously and cruelly, you know, for living in Israel, a Jew living in Israel. Don't forget that. But nobody is giving sanctions on the Palestinians who killed him. Instead, they're busy focusing on, and I saw this video of Omar Asad, a 78-year-old Palestinian-American who died after being detained, handcuffed, blindfolded, and later abandoned in near-freezing conditions by soldiers of the battalion. I saw that this was right after the war broke out. Kishmer and Tuchus. Sorry. Stuff happens. Stuff happens. The IDF has proven consistent and transparent when it comes to their treatment of Hamas. And honestly, you guys saw what happened to the Russian, the Islamic terrorists in Russia who shot up that theater. They beat the crap. They took one guy's ear off and made him eat it, okay, with herring and caviar. So don't fall into this trap that they're setting, because it's absurd. Absurd. At a time when our soldiers are fighting terrorist monsters. Monsters. We're doing it for the West, by the way. Losing soldiers every day. These people are savages. I know them. I see them. They are, it's apples and oranges. I'm not saying anyone deserves to die. Everyone should live happily ever after. But 99% of them are either terrorists, wannabe terrorists, relative of terrorists, terrorist sympathizers, or just dumb donkeys who do what everyone else is doing. So our IDF are brilliant, handsome, lovely, magnificent boys and girls are out there dealing with this garbage, and Biden is sanctioning them. I mean, if that's not a moral low. And I pity America, because America's, listen, every action has a reaction. And America is blessed because of the principles that it was built on. And that's why the Lubavitcher Rebbe always said, it says on the dollar, in God we trust. Because even when it comes to money, or especially when it comes to money, we recognize that everything comes from above. I mean, that's on American, U.S. currency. And that's because the founding fathers of America were God-fearing, and they kept the Noahide laws, and they didn't throw transgender parties on Easter, for whatever that's worth. I'm not saying we're safe in Christian hands either. But my point is that America threw away religion. And I had this conversation with Alan Dershowitz, who's like, there's no reason that we should be teaching religion in school. And I was like, I don't care if it doesn't make sense. I don't care if it's not practical. We did it your way. Look what happened. We took religion out of the schools and everything went to hell. So I don't care how we do it. I don't care if it's legal. You're a lawyer. Make it work. Make it legal. Make it not legal. The children who grew up in public schools in America were cheated of faith. They were cheated of faith. They were given iPhones and told that God makes mistakes and creates boys who are really girls and girls who are really boys every day, all day. So, you know, that's a tragedy. It's absolutely tragic what happened to the youth of America. And it's not fixable. You can't bring faith. Listen, I'm a from mother of four. I'm raising four children in this technological age in Israel, and I am also fighting for my kids' attention. Here in Israel, they would rather be on screens than go out hiking any day of the week. I mean, how tragic is that? Because the screens are appealing. And you can't teach children about the beauty of life and the meaning of life and the energies of life, the spirituality and the beautiful things around them, if their faces are in their screens, right? So it's just, thank God we have Shabbos, because Shabbos we can sit and we can communicate with the kids, and then we can make eye contact and they can internalize. And if you make Shabbos a beautiful day, your kids love it and they'll keep Shabbos. So the American youth, I fear that there's no way of bringing them back, because religion and spirituality and morality and ethics, those things have to be learnt. They have to be learnt. And if they didn't have to be learnt, they wouldn't be in the Torah, and they wouldn't be in the Pirkei Avos, and they wouldn't be the building blocks of Judaism. So I am just highly doubtful that there's any coming back from what's going on those campuses. The feathers are out of the pillow. The cat's out of the bag. The genie's out of the bottle. The horse has bolted from the stable. The virus has spread beyond containment. All right, guys, I'm going to take a minute here to encourage you, Erev Pesach, to make a donation for some great tactical gear that my friend Uri and I are fundraising for. Every single dollar that you give, we are taking and using to buy tactical gear for hundreds of soldiers. We've already delivered tons of gear. We have helmets and vests, and there's even drones that are purchased so that the IDF soldiers have eyes ahead of them when they enter the dangerous war zones and battlegrounds that they've been fighting on for months now. And every single helmet, every single extra piece of gear that helps an IDF soldier operate in these harrowing conditions, well, it saves life. It really does save a life. So I'm going to encourage you, on behalf of the IDF soldiers who are here fighting for us, defending Israel over Yom Tov. That's what they're doing. They're out there defending Israel over Yom Tov. I'm going to ask you to please, on behalf of the podcast, on behalf of the mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers all across Israel who are waiting for their loved ones to come home during this difficult time as Israel defends its people and its borders from barbaric Islamic terrorism, well, you can be a part of this fight. $18 to $36, 10 grand. Come on, we're raising 10 grand so we can meet the $90,000 goal we have set in order to help our Chayalim. So go ahead. The link is in the show notes. Just go down to the app you're listening to this podcast on, and you'll see a couple links and click on it. It's all completely legit. You can pay in many different ways. Nobody's taking your money. This is not a scam. We're just here to help, and we've created an avenue that you can be a partner with us in bringing IDF soldiers all the most requested gear. For more videos and pictures, head down to the show notes and join the Weekly Squeeze WhatsApp chat, where I posted all kinds of great clips where you can see the helmets and how awesome they are. And yeah, help out. The link is in my show notes. Okay, there are so many other things I want to get to, joyful things. But first, for those of you who are interested in or worried about Iran, this was sent around from an international lawyer, authored by a senior U.S. Middle East advisor regarding the strike by Israel of Iran. He says, number one, there's 10 things here. I'll go through them quickly. Number one, it's likely, unlikely to be the last word. It appears to be more of a down payment. So more to come. Number two, the impression that Israel would not respond was too dangerous to even allow to develop. Remember, this was the largest missile attack in modern history from one country to another. So they had to right away say, uh-uh. Like my friend Hami, the dog trainer, says, uh-uh. So even if it was symbolic, a counterattack was essential early. Number three, Nasrallah, that's the leader of Hezbollah, on Friday a week ago said that Israel is defeated. It's entirely dependent on the U.S. and cannot act without it, while the U.S. is abandoning Israel. Fake news. So Israel acted to show it both can and will act alone, despite the U.S. by doing this attack. Number four, Israel must signal to its Arab allies around the world, around the region, don't believe Israel is constrained by Washington or limited in power or failing. It can and will strike the common Iranian enemy alone when the time will come. We will protect ourselves. Number five, Israel showed Iran that we can strike them whenever we want and you won't know about it and you'll have no warning and no defense and no means to stop it. Number six, and this is about the Iranian people. Israel is signaling to the Iranian people that Israel has joined their fight and they are no longer alone. And this is something I mentioned earlier. I don't know much about the Iranian people, but there are innocent people. There are many, 75% of them, from what I understand. Number seven, this is essentially an Israeli declaration that it now understands it is a unified regional war. This is the first full-up Israeli-Iranian war, and we're not fighting separate wars on separated fronts. They're all various fronts in one war. Basically, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, all the little terrorist rats running around, they're all getting money from Iran. And this is the first time Iran didn't use a proxy. They just straight up shot from Iran. They're like, here we are, gloves are off. Number eight, striking Isfahan, the geographic heart of the Iran nuclear program, warns Iran not to lurch forward on the nuclear program. Now, everyone's like, Iran. What are they making those nukes for? They're making them for Israel. Clearly. So we have every right to preemptively destroy their facilities. And I don't know why we don't. But Israel sent a strong message that it's vulnerable and can be taken out by Israel at will. Number nine, all that said, Israel prefers first to decisively finish the unresolved wars fought by the tentacles of the octopus. That means the war in Gaza. It could pass through Beirut, Sana'a, and Baghdad. And here's a little history for you. But as the Doolittle raid signaled to Americans in April 1942 that the war, which began in Hawaii, will end in Tokyo. Israel has laid down the marker that it can and will, in the end, visit upon Tehran. But it will fight this war on its own terms. And its terms are to slice off the tentacles first and then circle back to address the issue of the surviving head. Number 10, and yet, it is also a signal that Israel can and will strike anywhere, even Iran, if there is an important operational reason to do so. Unlike Washington, it is not blind to Iran orchestrating it all, nor afraid of potential Iranian retaliatory escalation. He concludes, I would expect Israel there to strike Iraqi militias, Hezbollah, Houthis, or wandering Iranian ships at any time and anywhere based on opportunity or need. So that is your update as far as Iran goes. I hope you sleep well tonight. Did you guys see this? Oh, my Lord. The Freedom Flotilla. So there's this woman named Medea Benjamin. She's a Polner Meshugana, as they say in Yiddish. I mean, she came to Washington wearing Holocaust pajamas. She's Jewish, but she's a crackpot. And she is joining the Freedom Flotilla, basically a multiple ships paid for probably by Susan Sarandon, are planned to sail on a humanitarian emergency mission to bring humanitarian aid, break the siege, and end the blockade that has collectively punished Palestinians in Gaza for 17 years. Medea Benjamin weighs about 75 pounds, and they're going to eat her for breakfast. They're going to smear her on a falafel and eat her for breakfast. So she has no clue, and I don't know why Israel would allow any of these crazy people. And they're going to be there's going to be political people with political influence, media personnel, and they're going to complicate the world's public opinion for Israel and use their false narratives of apartheid and genocide and blah, blah, blah to create more chaos in an already extremely volatile region. And this is how dangerous these people are. This is how dangerous it is when Susan Sarandon funds terrorists, because look what's happening. All of this money is being loaded onto ships and brought here. Ke'ilu, they can help. Ke'ilu, that we're waiting for Medea Benjamin to come solve the problems in the Middle East. We're actually helping a humanitarian crisis by feeding them a little less. We all know how dangerous it is to be overweight, how many diseases are produced by a high BMI. All right, positive things. Let's talk about some positive things before I let you go to celebrate the holiday freedom with your family, your loved ones, you and yours. What's going on in my beautiful land of Israel? Well, I'll tell you like this. First of all, I got to give Israelis credit. They are working so hard to help the young men and women, the girls and boys of this country, get through this difficult time with music and unity. And there have been dozens and dozens of videos that have come out where Israeli youth perform and sing their favorite songs, our favorite Israeli songs. So this week, I saw a magnificent performance of Vehisha Amda, originally by Shweki, performed by Yeshiva Bnei Kinor David. And what you see here is in an amphitheater, or like an outdoor sports field almost, there are dozens, there must be 150 kids here, all playing instruments, saxophones, drums, instruments, I don't even know, ouds, keyboards. There's a choir, immense choir, a boys choir, pianists, guitarists, percussionists, and they are all singing Vehisha Amda, and it is absolutely heartwarming video. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can watch it on YouTube, unless you're already on Instagram, and then hopefully you're following My Beautiful Land of Israel and you've seen it there. They're playing these Middle Eastern instruments, and if you've never been to the Music Museum in Kikar Musika in Yerushalayim, you're missing out. They have an incredible, small but very informative music museum where you can learn about all the different music of the Jewish people, including Mizrahi music, which has instruments like the oud. What else is here? They're playing this, the rabab. It's kind of like it's a string instrument that's flat on your lap. It's kind of like a cross between a violin and a guitar, and you pluck it. So that was heartlifting and beautiful because they're singing the song that speaks to our people. In every generation, they try to kill us, and in every generation, we are redeemed. And that's the message from these boys. They write, "We, the students and staff of Yeshiva Bnei Kinor David, are committed to uplifting the spirits of our community. With music and songs set to the cherished melodies of Yonatan Rozel, we aim to spread joy and warmth to the Jewish people and the people of Israel. You know what? I'm just going to play the song here. I should totally just play the song here. Okay, I'm going to put the song here. So go ahead and make sure you're listening at one speed. This is V'hi She'amda by Yeshivas B'nai Kinnor David, the Harp of David. Thank you. right, you can put this podcast at a faster speed. I'm going to share a few more lovely things so you can go into Pesach with a happy heart, knowing that you belong or support the most incredible nation in the world, the Jewish people, the people of Am Yisrael, the nation of the God of Israel, because we are just so full of soul. Speaking of soul, Omer Adam had a massive concert. I think it was postponed. There were supposed to be maybe two nights or three nights. Anyway, he's a huge singer here. He sings Modani. And the concert was canceled because of Iran. In any case, he had drones in the sky over the audience that said, Mechakim Lachem, waiting for you. And he sang one of his new songs. And everybody sang along. And it was just like, bring our hostages home. We can't function. We're at a concert and we're having a good time, but we're just crying for you. And enough is enough. Enough is enough. And we're wasting our time. And like Shimon Peres, remember him? Of blessed memory. Twice prime minister and president of Israel. Shimon Peres. Like he said, and this is what, 10 years ago? 15 years ago, actually. He said, there's no one to talk to. There's no one to talk to. Hamas, even theoretically, okay, even conceptually, they are against negotiations, they're against talking, they're against peace. These people are for terror. And he explains, we have nothing against the Gazan people. But what do you want us to do? None of us, neither the Palestinians or the Jewish people, the Israelis, can live with terror. And that's it. I don't know why it's so complicated. But here we are fighting a war. 24 four-legged heroes, 24 canines, 24 trained dogs lost their lives, were killed in action since October 7th, shot on kibbutzim, killed seeking out bombs and ammunition in Gaza and around Israel. 24 sweet dogs. This is an exhibit somewhere. It looks like a small museum. And let's not forget our fallen canine heroes of the IDF. Another video I saw this week, and this is from Golda Meir. I love Golda Meir. She's the only person I would break my I don't go to the movies policy for, and I did. I went to Modi'in and I sat and watched it by myself because I love her. And I shared a video this week, and she said, this is not a quarrel over a piece of land. They refuse to believe that we have a right to be here. He said, and she's speaking to the world, she says, decent people, liberal people, people who are for self-determination, right, sympathize with the Palestinians. Everybody has the right to self-determination except the Jewish people. Why don't we have the rights? We have to be evidently minorities all over the world forever. We have no right for independence. And then the journalist asks, do you ever doubt your policies? And she says, no, sir. What do you mean? My policy is to keep our people alive and to keep our independence. And the people of the world have to realize this. And unless they realize that, there's no understanding of the entire situation. That's it. This is what we're dealing with. Idiots in the West. Idiots in the West and terrorists in the East, the Middle East. But some people get it. John Fetterman, he put on a suit and tie, which means that if you were thinking of coming to the Seder in your pajamas, because John Fetterman goes to Washington to his office in his pajamas, well, you can't, because he put on a suit and tie to make an official video from his office, which, by the way, is plastered with posters of the hostages for 6 months, he says. We are not going to stop talking about it. We're not, and there's not enough stories in the media. We don't know where the hostages are. We don't know if they're alive. We don't know if they're okay. And our responsibility is to keep talking about this, he says. We need to demand that the hostages come home. And he says very clearly, Hamas owns this entire catastrophe. And they need to send them home and surrender. And out of left field, John Fetterman, God bless you. Don't judge a book by its cover. What a strong supporter of Israel. What a strong supporter of Israel. May God bless him and his family for standing up and fighting and reminding the public over and over again that we have hostages and it's not okay and people are cruel for supporting Hamas and allowing our innocent men, women, and children to be in those terrible conditions. It's just, it's really revolting. All right, you see, I get worked up so easily. I get that's why I walk my dog 3 times a day, because I need to ground myself. Speaking of dogs, my favorite video of the week is this clip where you see some, handsome IDF soldiers saving a cute puppy's life, a tiny little puppy, which may or may not be adopted by me. I was like, oh, I want that puppy. It's just this blonde little yellow. I mean, it's probably a Kanani dog or whatever. It's definitely not a golden retriever. But there's a fire burning. The dog's in a little box and the soldiers pick it up and give her water. And I'm just like, oh, IDF soldiers and puppies, what could be better? So if you are feeling overwhelmed, join the group or check out Instagram. The link is in the show notes and enjoy some handsome IDF soldiers with a puppy. So there you have it, folks. Episode 189 of the Weekly Squeeze podcast. Please make a donation. Help us buy those tactical helmets that we so much want to deliver to the Chayalim at the front lines defending Israel from barbaric Hamas and Hezbollah and Houthi and Iranian terrorists. Wishes for a happy and healthy Passover, a kosher and Frelichem Pesach. I'll see you next week.